Music has a profound effect on our lives. It pulls us through the darkest of times and makes us feel on top of the world at the best of times. At concerts, you create memories and sometimes friends that last a lifetime. And creating this podcast, I love to hear the stories regarding those memories. Today's show is just one of those memories, a memory of a lifetime, even when those memories are shared with someone not with us anymore. I'd like to dedicate today's show in the memory of our guest brother, John, and would like to thank our guest, Jan, for sharing her story today. This is the Pits and Gigs podcast.
Are you ready?
Welcome to the Pits and Gigs podcast, where we talk about years of gigness past. I'm Jamie Crampton, amateur musician, avid gig goer, and just all around great guy. This is Jan. How are you doing, Jan?
I'm doing well, Jamie. Thank you.
Are you, how's life treating you at the moment?
Life is good. I've got the day off, and it's another balmy day in Florida in November. About 86 degrees today.
Is that 86 degrees Fahrenheit?
Yeah, I just remembered. We're good old America.
I could think of worse places to be locked up at the moment. So today, Jan, we're going to talk about a very interesting gig from my perspective. It's going to be April 12, 1996 at the Masquerade in Ybor City in Florida. We're going to be talking about the Foo Fighters on that date. They were playing on the tour, which was the Foo Fighters album tour. Do you want to tell me a little bit how you got into the Foo Fighters before we talk about them?
Sure. Well, I got hooked on the song This Is a Call around that time, and I didn't know who the artist was yet. There was just so many songs at that time, to be honest, in the mid to late 90s that really, you know, I enjoyed a lot, like The Offspring and Sublime and just a whole bunch of like alt rock bands. And I heard that This Is a Call prevalently on the radio, like on my way to work. I like to rock out, and that was one that was getting a lot of play. And then I was also subscribed to Rolling Stone magazine at the time, and I got a new issue with a picture of the Foo Fighters on the front, and Dave Grohl in his young and beautiful self with his arms folded, and I think it was Pat Smear, and I'm not sure who the other guy was. I'll have to look that up.
William Goldsmith?
Maybe, yeah, might have been the first guy. But on the cover, and they talked about how Dave Grohl had broken off from Nirvana after, you know, the obvious demise of Nirvana when Kurt Cobain decided to end it, and hadn't heard anything from any of the band members for like at least a year. And then all of a sudden I saw that. And when I put it together with the song, I was just so, I don't know, I knew that was going to be a new good sound. So I started checking out the other tracks on the album, and I was just thrilled. So I have been to just about every concert that they've had that they've come to Florida for. I've even flown to Boston for their Fenway Park Broken Leg Tour. And as I was pregnant for the very first show with my third child, Sierra, and then Sierra and I traveled to Boston for the Broken Leg Tour. She became a Foo Fighters fan. Oh, and my other kids were like, enough Foo Fighters. And I'm like, no, never enough. But she loves them. She found their music on iPods and didn't know it was them either. Just liked the lyrics and the sound and realized later that it was Foo Fighters. So she got it. She understood my extreme love of their music and of Dave Grohl's personality and the way they just were so good and loud and funny and humble and just rocked, you know. They were just like so many things about them, not to mention the amazing music they just...
Oh yeah, definitely. And I think that's, this is the thing about the Foo Fighters, you know, they've been around, what, 20, 25 years now? They formed in 1994. Over that time, they've had, what, 9 albums? The albums being Foo Fighters 95, which was what you saw, featuring tracks such as This Is A Call, what you mentioned, I'll Stick Around, and Big Me. Big Me will always stick out to me as being... with a funny music video, you know, with the Mentos gums.
And you know what? I honestly didn't like that video. Not because
really? It
wasn't fun. It was funny, just like them. But to me, that is actually one of their most beautiful songs.
Okay. Yeah, no. And then they followed up with The Colour and the Shape, 1997, which featured Monkey Wrench, My Hero, and, of course, we spoke about it before the show, probably one of the greatest rock songs ever written, Everlong.
Everlong, yeah.
I think if you've not heard Everlong, you've lived under a rock for 20 years. I think you'd probably agree with that.
Yes, definitely. I think it's one of the most beautiful rock songs ever written by any band, so.
One of the things I do love is when I wake up in the morning every day, I've got my phone set to play a music playlist. And in that music playlist, have you ever heard on the Greatest Hits album, the acoustic version of Everlong?
Yes.
That is beautiful. So beautiful.
It is. The thing that I love about their acoustic versions is that their songs rock so hard when they're rocking out to them. But when he puts it on an acoustic, it's still such a great song, but on an acoustic level. But yeah, Everlong acoustically literally moves me. It's just an amazing piece, very well put together.
I would agree, and like I said, you know, before we start recording, still probably the only song I've ever heard live where I actually did physically start crying when I heard it, because I've spent 20 years growing up to that song, and to hear it live, and it was amazing. So then they followed up in 1999 with There's Nothing Left to Lose, with the singles being Learn to Fly and Breakout. If I remember rightly, Breakout, was that not included for the film Me, Myself and Irene?
Yes.
With Jim Carrey?
They did have in Me, Myself and Irene, as a matter of fact. You make me dizzy, running circles in my head.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, with him going crazy, it worked really well, so.
Oh, it was a great song. It's a great song. They followed up with the album One by One in 2002, which features the singles All My Life and Times Like These.
Oh, that one just so, you know, just when I thought, okay, they can't keep coming out with good albums. They just can't. And then they come out with One by One. And it was electrifying. I saw One by One on the BBC, as a matter of fact, one morning. It was the first time I'd heard it. I was just like, damn, they did it again. Great album, yeah.
Yeah, and do you know what? I think that album solidifies, like you say, it's another one where you just think they can't do another one. Now, I don't know if you're a sports fan at all, but my local team back in England, Burnley Football Club, they use Times Like These before they come on the pitch.
Cool.
As an intro, kind of, before they come on, and I just love it that the Foo Fighters, you know, use combining my two loves, really.
Yes, agreed. I know what you mean. One of the things about the Foo Fighters, I think that if significant things hadn't happened in my life, that I still would love them and they would still be important to me. But they were like significant to me, and every album they made had songs that I felt were written for me, almost like when you hear someone tell the preacher, you know, you were preaching to me today. Well, that was how I felt about so many of their songs. It just, you know, the feeling of life and love and loss and breaking up, and then just, you know, the mellow love songs or the life, you know.
That also, for me, I completely understand that feeling. And I think that also resonates at a live show. I don't know if you'd agree, but at a live show, you can be in a stadium with 20,000 people And because those songs have had that profound meaning on you, Dave Grohl could be singing to you only, and those 20,000 people don't matter.
Exactly.
So, no, I completely agree with you on that basis. Then they followed up in 2005 with In Your Honor, featuring tracks Best of You and DOA.
Mm-hmm.
Then came the album Echoes, Silence, Patience and Grace.
Grace.
Yes, 2007, featuring the absolutely blistering track The Pretender.
Mm-hmm.
Followed up with a little bit of a gap with Wasting Light in 2011, featuring the singles A Rope, Walk, These Days, and probably a close second of my favourite songs of theirs, Elandria.
Nice, yeah, that's a great one.
I never forget, actually, I saw a great performance on Letterman, I think it was, of Elandria.
Yes.
I don't know if you managed to see that one.
Very nice performance, yes. I've seen just about every one of their performances in any form, to be honest. Mention a performance and I'll be like, oh yeah.
Yeah, I know that one. Saw that one. Got that one DVR'd.
Yes.
Then they followed up in 2014 with Sonic Highways, featuring singles Something from Nothing and In the Clear. And then their most recent album is Concrete and Gold, 2017, with the singles Run and The Sky is a Neighborhood. So out of those albums, would you be able to pick a favorite?
Well, honestly, the first one, just because it was so raw, and especially learning that Dave Grohl had written pretty much every part, composed every lyric and musical part, and then performed every part on every instrument himself, and put this album out, self-made. It's just amazing to me that he, you know, is that much of a musical savant or something, that he's just so able to do that. And it wasn't until the album suddenly became a hit that he was like, oh, I need to get a band together so I can tour.
Yeah,
and he did. And we got Pat Smear back from Nirvana. And, you know, just it was kind of a running joke for a while. They had a lot of guitarists that kind of came and went. But but it's just the first album to me was the rawest one. Now, Echoes, Silence, Patience and Grace is a very close second for me for a lot of reasons. Once again, just a lot of meaningful songs that spoke to me, that were very poetic. So, and that's the one that my daughter also found her favorites on, that connected her and I as Foo Fighter fans together. So
that's fantastic. Yeah, I seem to remember reading an article on how Dave Grohl learned or started writing on guitar. And because obviously he's originally a drummer, I don't know if I recall this right, and you might know better than me. Did he not write guitar as if he was writing drums or something along the lines of that? He tried to pick same rhythms or something?
Yeah, something of that nature. You know, I really think that he could pick up any instrument and play it well if he wanted to after a while. I think just immersing himself in music the way that he did when he was in Nirvana was a lot of that. If you listen to Friend of a Friend, it was written while he was with Nirvana. It's a very kind of melancholy song about addiction and friendship and music. And he was talking about how he picked up his friend's guitar to write the song. So I think he just, you know, loved music and instruments so much that he would pick up an instrument and play. I mean, I play by ear myself. I've played the clarinet, the piano, and the bassoon and a few other instruments in the band, and I understand what it means to play by ear. It's just, and I do consider it a gift. I'm nothing like Dave Grohl. I get it. I get, you know, so to see something like, you know, him performing all those instruments and hearing that album, to me, it's just amazing. He's just meant to be musical, you know. That was his calling in life. So.
Oh, definitely. And we just before we move on to talking about the show itself, I'm intrigued because talking to Foo Fighters fans, there's obviously the Foo Fighters was almost thrust into the world from the unfortunate events surrounding Kurt Cobain's death. So the million-dollar question for me to you as a Foo Fighters fan would be, if you had the choice, taking out Kurt Cobain's death as an equation, if you had the choice between an amicable split of Nirvana and having the Foo Fighters, or continuing to see Nirvana with Dave Grohl behind the kit, what do you think would be, what would your view be on that?
That is one of those questions. And I just, you know, life is funny that way. I mean, something really horrible and sad can happen, and you think, you know, that nothing good else can happen, and then suddenly something else beautiful comes to that person's life, you know? And I think that's kind of what happened with the Foo Fighters. And I don't know what would have happened. Nirvana was such a powerhouse band, but they were funny because they didn't want to be. at least I don't think Kurt Cobain wanted to be. He was very, very private and punk, and I think he was extremely uncomfortable with his fame. Whereas I think Dave Grohl just loves it. And he doesn't love it like, oh, I'm so great, everybody. He loves it like, this is so great. Everybody loves me, and I love them. And you know what I mean? It's like, he's not like a fame, you know, person that doesn't, you know, respect the fact that he's where he is. He loves it, he respects it, and he, you know, just carries on that way. And it's, you know, it's what I love about him. I don't know what would have happened if Herb hadn't left us. We might not have ever gotten the Foo Fighters. I don't know. I'm certainly not, you know, wouldn't have wanted it to have happened if we could have prevented it. But it did. And then, hey, we got the Foo Fighters.
Okay, no, definitely, yeah.
Something happened. Something good came out of it. So, something amazing. So.
Yeah, and it like I say, I like to just pose the question, Lada, because it is an interesting one. It is something beautiful from something terrible. And,
yeah.
You know, but you just wonder if Nirvana, I mean, You spoke before about how your daughters and your granddaughters have picked up on the Foo Fighters even years after you first got involved.
Yeah.
You know, you wonder if Nirvana would have had a shelf life.
You
know, if there would have been, you know, in the 90s was very punk, kind of like, you say, The Offspring.
That was one of my favorite bands then, too.
The early Blink 182 and stuff like that. You don't really hear of those nowadays because obviously punk isn't a big thing nowadays, but the Foo Fighters continue to push.
A little bit of punk in there, yeah. They still manage to kind of combine, you know, a little edge of punk to some of their stuff, which I think is cool since it's one of the places they came from, a lot of them, so.
Yeah. Now, I was very surprised, I must say, obviously coming through the albums, you know, it was a very, I don't want to say pop rock style because it isn't pop rock.
They kind of have though. They kind of have gotten pop rockish. I mean, that's the appeal of the Foo Fighters, and some of their stuff, in my opinion, is a little more commercial. But I still love it. I can't help it. I'm a sucker for the Foo Fighters. But they're certainly harder heavy metal rock bands, even within the band itself. Taylor Hawkins is in another band, and you know, it's kind of interesting to check out some of their other musical taste and things. But yeah, there's a pop element to a lot of the other stuff.
And I must say, I was very, very surprised when they came out, when I first heard Run, when it came out, because Run for me was a return to a really punk sound.
Yes.
I loved it straight away. Absolutely loved it straight away. And when I first heard it live, it was wow, you know.
Yeah, I was knocked out, yeah. And the video was great.
The video was fantastic, with the old men.
And the makeup and everything.
I still think a lot of women around the world, and even men, would still love Dave Grohl at that age, though.
Oh, yeah. I would push his wheelchair around, honey. He can get as old as he wants. And he's one of those people who's really, in my opinion, and in others, but he's really grown into himself nicely. I mean, he was not a bad-looking young man, but he was a very lanky, kind of goofy guy, you know. And he, to me, is just one of the most handsome dads ever. He's a very good-looking middle-aged man.
And he's also an amazing father.
Right? Yes. I know, as if I didn't love him already enough.
I was very lucky when I saw them last year. He brought his daughter Violet on tour.
She's awesome.
Yeah, she's got a very bright future ahead of her. I think all the kids have with a father like Dave Grohl.
But... yeah, they're all carrying on in a musical way, it seems. And Violet's voice is astounding. I don't know if you've heard her sing, but she's kind of amazing.
I think she did a solo when
we
saw them.
When we were young, and it's kind of amazing. If you get a minute, take a listen to it. Violet Grohl singing something like that when we were young. It's very moving. Yeah, she's going to be a musician in her own right if she wants to be. She has the talent, for sure.
I suppose it comes... There's two sides of it, really, though, isn't there? I mean, one, you're born with an immensely talented father. You know, you pick up the skills and the life of knowing the music industry and the skills of being a musician, but you've also got the tag of the Grohl name.
Yes.
It's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, I think it will be, maybe to some extent, but I bet if she's anything like her dad, she'll be awesome and just cool about it anyway, you know? I'm hoping, because I definitely see some talent there, so it would be good to see more of her in the future.
Definitely.
And hear more of her in the future.
That's the albums. And before we jump into the show, have you seen recently the rock battle that's been going on between Dave Grohl and Nandi Bushell?
Yeah, that is so adorable. He is such a pro kid musician person, and that little girl is insanely good. And he, you know, just when she started playing his music, and maybe a little better than him, if you know. But I just love that he's engaged with her, and they have had this ongoing thing that is spotlighting her. I just think it's awesome.
It is, and I do agree. He's such a pro, not just a pro child, pro fan kind of. There's not many musicians like him that. When we actually just to share a quick story before we go on to the gig itself. When we saw them last year, you may have seen videos of it, but there was a song where in the crowd someone was holding a sign up with a child on the shoulders, and the sign said "My first gig," and this child was no more than 4 year old, 4 or 5 year old. He actually pulled him on stage, and there's videos, and this child was dancing next to Dave Grohl, absolutely rocking out.
He does that a lot. He always pulls people up on stage, and kids are one of his favorite things. So, yes, that was an adorable thing. That was very cool.
What was saying, Dave Grohl for Senate?
Yeah.
Dave Grohl for Prime Minister, not Prime Minister, sorry, President.
I actually have a meme that has a picture of Dave Grohl, and it says Dave Grohl for President. Just quit messing around and get the best man for the job in there.
Yeah, yeah. Dave Grohl supported by Obama. There
right.
We go.
A bit right. Of a... I would follow that administration. I'm sure.
So we move on to the show where you try going on Ticketmaster. Hold on.
Well, we got our first two tickets for my friend Brandy and I on Ticketmaster, which was the format. Then my brother had come into town that night, and so we wanted to go out together, so we just went there and we got a scalped ticket from someone for John, and it was general seating, so we could just pretty much fight our way to the front. So we did, and just enjoyed the show, had an amazing time, and I think we went to the Renaissance Festival that weekend as well, which was always just a blast, and it was just such a special weekend. And like I said before, you know, a lot of things can happen in life, and a lot of significant things happened to me throughout the years. And a couple months after that concert, I lost my brother. He passed away unexpectedly. Yeah. And, you know, it was definitely one of the hardest times of my life. But the next album that came out, Learning to Fly, was one that just for some reason was almost like a, I'm trying to think of the right way to say it. It just spoke to me, and it kind of calmed me in a way, like hearing about the everything's going to be all right. And I'm getting all emotional, but anyway. No, just
it's kind of a bittersweet album, is it?
Yeah, since that was our last concert together, and it was such a great show, I'm just so glad we got to share that. And there's always going to be a little piece of that original show in my memories for the Foo Fighters and that first concert, and what a great time it was. So,
but I guess this is kind of why talking about these memories, especially in these times when we're taking a time to really reminisce about the luxuries in life that we had before, obviously everything going on now, we get to talk about and reminisce and really have these memories. And concerts for me hold so many memories like that, where, like, I think you mentioned when you first got in contact that through concerts you met your friend Brandy, was it?
Yeah, well, we worked together, but we actually probably worked together but didn't really consider each other much. It was a huge hospital, but I ran into her at the Pink Floyd concert at the Tampa Stadium, and then I ran into her again at the Rolling Stones concert. So I started realizing, oh, this chick's cool. She likes good rock and roll. So that's when we started meeting and gathering together and collecting music data on who was coming to what club and what concerts were coming up. And she and I have been going to concerts ever since, as much as possible. So,
yeah. So it's amazing that, you know, you make friends through music. You also make these crucial memories, these key memories, like of your brother, you know, that you can take forward in life. And they're always going to be, it's bittersweet, but it's happy at the same time. You're always going to have that happy memory of that night. You know, you saw history in the making.
Sorry, yeah. We're seeing something special here, you know?
So just touching on the support act, do you remember what the support act might have been?
No. I'm not sure. Actually, I feel bad. I don't know if we got there after that or...
So the support act for the show that night is a band called, there was a rock band from Ohio called The Breepers, and they featured Kim Deal from a little known band called The Pixies. Were you ever a fan of The Pixies?
I have. I love The Pixies, but actually I wouldn't have heard of them that night. At least I wasn't familiar with them. I got to know The Pixies later on in the late 90s, but that's cool. That's really cool that that was the opening band.
I don't know if you recall this actually from the night. According to Setlist FM, the first song that they played on the night was Enough Space. Now, I've only ever seen videos and obviously seen them live, the Foo Fighters in the modern era.
Yeah.
And they are one of the few bands I've ever seen that don't require a massive intro, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's just Dave Grohl coming on with his guitar.
Yep, just that's it. And the whole stadium rises.
do you remember if it was anything similar? Is that kind of trying to delve too far back?
Once we started playing, the whole club was jumping up and down in unison because he was that good. But before he started playing, because this was a club, the Masquerade, in a little party strip of Tampa called Ybor, everyone was just kind of milling around and having beers and smoking their cigarettes. This is when everyone still smoked inside. And, you know, they were just, it was more like the music was sometimes in the background and you'd walk around and socialize, you know. But the minute they started playing, that was it. It was all about the concert. Everyone was front and center paying attention to Dave Grohl and to the Foo Fighters. So it was just too explosive a show to ignore. It was too good.
And, like, looking through... Something I noted when I was looking through the set list, it's so strange to see a Foo Fighters set list without the tracks like My Hero and Everlong and The Pretender and Monkey Wrench, you know,
it is very...
I've got to be truly honest, despite saying that I'm a Foo Fighters fan, the only songs I actually know off the set list is This Is a Call, Big Me, and I'll Stick Around.
Yep, those are three of the more prominent ones.
But the set list here, and you can probably tick them off, you know, as being a good song or a bad song. So they started with Enough Space. They went into Alone and Easy Target. They played Good Grief, This Is a Call, Winnebago, Watershed, For All the Cows, Butterflies. So go on.
For All the Cows, that's one of my little favorite kind of, to me it's a tongue-in-cheek song. It's a cute little ditty.
Okay. Butterflies, Big Me, My Poor Brain, Gas Chambers, Up in Arms, Weenie Beanie, Pop Dung, How I Miss You, Stick Around,
yep.
Down in the Park, and then finished on Exhausted. So would you be a huge fan of a lot of those?
Yes. Weenie Beanie is one of my favorite ones to rock out to, just because if you ever listen to that, it's extremely just thrashing and kind of punkish. You know, I was still kind of like everyone else, getting over the whole, you know, Nirvana thing, kind of what I saw as the end of punk era, because I was a very sort of punk rockish. Well, that was one of my favorite things in high school, but, you know, I was just so kind of felt like we were losing that. And songs like Weenie Beanie and Winnebago and stuff, they're just so kind of punk, you know, they just have a really strong vibe to them. And then the For All the Cows, it's just a little tiny song that's very slow and acoustic, stuck in the middle of all these thrashing rock songs. But I just love that song. I've got a CD someone made me with a picture of a cow on it, and that's one of the songs on the CD. But yeah, to me, that's one of my favorite albums, even though a lot of the songs on it aren't so well known, just because it still resonates with me, with the hard rock, the grunge, the punk. And I just, you know, thought it was a great intro album.
So as a whole set list, would you give that an excellent rate?
You know what? It's been a long time, but I remember still, I bought the album before going to see the show, because like I said, I was blown away by the first couple of songs I'd heard, like This Is a Call and I think, I'm trying to think what the other one was I'd kind of gotten familiar with, but once I had the album, I listened to it like crazy. I wore it out, so I was very familiar with it. And the set list was like that. And I remember they sang one song from what would be their next album. And Dave stopped to talk to the audience and pointed out a cousin in the audience that he had hung out with when he was younger, who apparently lived in Tampa. And so that was pretty cool. We're like, oh, hey, Dave's cousin, you know. And the fact that he had hung out here and gone to a punk rock club with his cousin.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
That's so cool. So brilliant. No, that's honestly sounds like an amazing night. And to think that, like, you could have been really close to Dave Grohl and...
Oh, I was right in front of him, screaming my head off.
Since then, obviously, the Foo Fighters have done a small amount of concerts since then. Would you say that was your favorite gig ever, or would you say there would have been another one?
Well, they both of my top favorites. I've been to just about every Foo Fighters concert that's come through Florida, but I flew to Richmond, Virginia for the Concrete and Gold Tour, which is where my boyfriend lives, and we went together, and that was their first date in the U.S. on their tour. So I got to see them in Virginia, which is his home state and town. Richmond, or, you know, near his hometown. So that was cool. But my two favorites would have to be that first concert where I knew they were going to blow up, and that, you know, special night with my brother and my still friend Brandy. But my second favorite would probably have to be the Boston Break a Leg tour that my daughter Sierra and I went to a few years ago. That was just outstanding. They had just come out with the Run and all that other stuff, you know, you know, that was just such a cool new album, too. And the fact that he had broken his leg and just built himself this crazy throne, apparently while on morphine. it was just such a great show. And Boston was just such a cool vibe. And, you know, we'd never go to Fenway Park and hang out around there. So just spending that weekend with my daughter and going to Boston and Fenway Park was very special to me. So those are probably my two favorite concerts. And the Mighty Mighty Bosstones opened for them.
Oh, that would have been unreal, because the Mighty Mighty Bosstones are brilliant.
Very good show.
Honestly, sounds like an amazing experience. That, and this one here, you know, I was very excited to speak about, because, you know, you like I said before, you saw history in the making, and I've been in very few situations personally when I've been able to go away from a concert and say to anyone I've spoke to about it, look, these guys are going to be huge, and it's actually come off. Whereas this time, you've obviously gone away from that, said to someone, these guys are going to be huge, and well,
sometimes they are now. But sometimes they don't. But yeah, this one definitely did.
Well, thank you very much for talking to me tonight, Jan.
Absolutely, Jamie. Thank you so much for having me.
It's been an absolute pleasure hearing about your experience, and I wish you so many more Foo Fighters gigs in the future. Thank you all for listening to the Pits and Gigs podcast. Please leave a review wherever you're listening to this. If you've got a story that you'd like to share, please contact us at any of the social media, that's Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, at Pits and Gigs Pod, or email us at pitsandgigs@gmail.com. We don't say goodbye, we just say, it's a little bit, and you smile.